Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 28th of April, Anno Domini 2018, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are going to do something unusual here today. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes, don't get the blues.
Wait.
Here comes the news. Oh, and
wait a minute,
sesame seed.
And you're going to change up the whole format?
The whole format. It's all going to be different today. We're going to do this instead.
Wait a minute. You didn't give me a heads up.
Okay, no. Heads up. We're changing everything. A well-resourced hacking group is using a previously unknown and unpatched bug in Internet Explorer to infect Windows PCs with malware. Researchers at Quihoo 360's core security unit say an advanced persistent threat group is using the IE vulnerability on a global scale, which is being delivered to select targets via malicious office documents loaded with what's called a double kill vulnerability. Victims are required to open the office document, which launches a malicious web page in the background to deliver malware from a remote server. But of course, it doesn't have to be an office document. It could be anything that takes you to a web page, say, an ad on another web page.
Yeah.
According to the firm, the vulnerability affects the latest version of IE and other applications that use that browser in the background, and there are a lot of them. Researchers say they've reported the issue to Microsoft and are also calling for an urgent patch. The attack apparently also uses a publicly known user account control bypass, along with file steganography, to hide itself. Microsoft's response to the IE attacks didn't really give much away. Windows has a customer commitment to investigate reported security issues and proactively update impacted devices as soon as possible. We recommend customers use Windows 10 and the Microsoft Edge browser for the best protection. Our standard policy is to provide remediation via our current Update Tuesday schedule. And so our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would love us to remind you, is massive zero-day attack on Internet Explorer. And your choices are, oh no, I use IE every day. I switched to Edge a while ago. I'm a Google Chrome user. Firefox is my browser. Safari forever. And I'm still using Lynx. Get off my lawn. So far we have 27 people who voted. The vast majority of you using Firefox, followed fairly closely by Google Chrome. I know you'll have more to say about this, so if you scroll down on the right and under Fascinating Stuff, you'll see the forums. Forum group is the poll discussion. Currently, at least the first poll discussion item is 28 April 18, massive zero-day attack on Internet Explorer. Now, I know that there are those of you who are going to be, and I haven't looked at them yet, but I'm sure somebody will be complaining that I didn't mention your browser. Well, I already put six things in there, and there comes a point where it just gets kind of ridiculous.
And then you get complaints that there's too many choices.
Right. So if you use Opera or Conqueror or Midori or any one of a thousand other browsers, of which there are Dolphin, lots of them, please feel free to mention that in the comments. I didn't purposely ignore you. I just stopped at six.
And some still use AOL.
How do you get to the internet? AOL.
Customer this week that still uses that.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to tell her all those malicious ads she's getting is because she's using the AOL website.
Yeah, exactly.
All right,
and so, of course, you can also give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. And before we get to the phones, let me just remind you, if you have an Amazon Echo, I won't say the trigger word. If you have an Amazon Alexa, I apologize to everybody. Alexa, stop. You can get it to play Jazz 90.1 anytime you like, including, of course, during the 2 hours of this show, by simply saying play Jazz 901 on TuneIn. You can also get your Google Home to do the same by saying the same thing, play Jazz 901 on TuneIn. Now, you may not need to say on TuneIn, but I can't figure out why some people have to and some people don't. Also, it is Jazz 901. I don't know why the others sometimes don't work, but Jazz 901, so far at least, always works. That you can find those also listed on our homepage. Okay, there it is. And you should be able to listen to us live there. And of course, live jazz all rest of the week, right through your Google Home or Amazon Echo. Very cool. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Robin from Rochester, New York. Hi, Robin. What's up?
Okay. Hi, Nick. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have Windows 7.
Yep.
And I like to play some nice games. And so I went into the games folder, more games from Microsoft. And I found a few that I liked. And when I was able to finally figure out how to play one of them, it said deluxe download. So I clicked on that, and it took forever and ever and a day. And I'm still waiting, so I exited out of that. And then I did some checking, and they said that all those games are only for Windows 10.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yes. Many of the games that are in Microsoft stopped supporting Windows 7 a while ago.
Yeah. So when your Windows 7 was made, they were Windows 7 games. And now that Windows 10 is out, they're only Windows 10 games.
Right.
So
Microsoft has stopped supporting Windows 10.
Windows 7.
For a while now. And the problem is that they're kind of not interested in supporting it anymore. They don't want Windows 7 people using Windows 7. They want people to be using Windows 10. They stopped supporting mainstream people on January 13th of 2015. So over 3 years ago. There is still extended support, but if you're not paying Microsoft for support, you don't have extended support. So they want you to move to Windows 10. They're not interested in supporting 7, and there's nothing really that you can do about it easily.
All right, then where do I find some computer games that are not violent?
And run on Windows 7.
And run on Windows 7.
Yeah.
Right, and then I don't will corrupt my computer.
Now you're asking a lot here, Robin.
If she goes to CNET.com, usually CNET still has a good battery of games and that type of stuff.
But you kind of have to be careful because CNET's have started wrapping their downloads in adware.
Yeah. Also, Geekware.
Major Geeks?
MajorGeeks.com.
They
How do you
also
spell that M-A-G?
M-A-J.
Major Geeks.
O-R.
O-R. Geeks. G.
G. G. G-E-E-K?
S.
G-E-E-K-S.
.com.
Okay.
And that's all one word, no space.
Right.
All right.
Now, those are good sites that you can do it, but like Nick said and Steve were saying, a lot of this stuff is going to have ads in it. So, you know, you got to, you know, put up with that stuff, too.
Well, you need to also be careful, because when you install these games, they will ask you a lot of questions and give you a lot of checkboxes that are already all checked for you.
Yeah.
And it's very tempting to just say next, 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 and just install whatever is there. But be very careful to read those checkboxes and uncheck the things you don't want, because they will try to install all kinds of junk on your computer.
Toolbars, making something else your default browser so to allow other stuff in. And here's the thing. You can go ahead and uncheck those, like Nick said, and the program will still install. It's just this other bloatware that's trying to tail on to this stuff and get installed on your machine also. The
right.
game will probably still go, but you don't need all that extra junk.
Right.
But it's taking the time to look it all over carefully. Don't get click happy, as I always say.
Right. Be very careful.
I saw that the other day, and they wanted a Google Chrome or something and default to this, and I unchecked all that.
Good.
Because I figure if I don't know what they're talking about, I better uncheck it.
Good yep. for you, Robin. Excellent.
Yeah. And but then it stopped at 41 seconds to go. And I waited for a good 15 minutes, so I exited out of everything because I figured there was something wrong somewhere.
You're probably right. A lot of some of the programs won't install if you don't add all the bloatware, but many of them, it's just you may have had a bad download, and that just is
or discovered
what it is.
That it wasn't Windows 10.
Or discovered it wasn't Windows 10.
It wasn't yeah. Windows 10.
But then it should give you an error that your computer.
Well, you would certainly think so, wouldn't you?
Doesn't meet the requirements or something.
Yeah.
Say that again.
It should give you an error that your computer doesn't meet the requirements or something like that. It shouldn't.
It
just
didn't.
Stop.
Yeah. No, they don't always. They yep. don't always, and that's a a sad thing. You wasted all that time yep. trying to do that. But like I say, try those two websites. But please.
Now I got Major Geeks, and then I didn't get a chance to understand the other one.
It's called CNET.com, and you can go to their download section.
How do you spell that?
CNET.com.
T is in Thomas?
Yes.
CNET.com.
Yeah, it's short for computer.
Wait a minute.
Hold on, Robin. It's short for computer network. CNET, all one word. C as in computer.
Oh, okay.
Net as in network.
Okay. All I kept hearing was the T.
Right.
C and the T. Okay. CNET.com.
There you go.
And then when you go there, you have to make sure that you pick Windows and Windows 7.
Okay.
One of the things that I've...
put a link.
I don't have to worry with either of these two with viruses.
Well,
yes.
You want to be careful about those checkboxes.
Okay.
For bloatware.
Right. That's how they make their money.
So
people pay them to...
the boxes...
You should be fine.
It should be okay.
Yep.
Yep.
Nothing is 100%, but they do a good job of checking.
And one of the things that I've actually done in the past is you go to the stores, regular department stores, and there's like a tiny little computer software section anymore because almost everything's downloaded.
Yeah.
But you'll probably find a disc, with 1,000 games on it for $5.
Those are the ones that I'm looking for, and I don't know where to look anymore.
You'd have to do a Google search.
Well, no, I'm just saying, Walmart, Target, Best Buy.
But
they
still might be
everybody.
On the internet.
Yeah.
Windows 7 games on disk.
Yep. And a lot of, most of them are junk, but for $5, you'll probably find, two or three or four of them that are pretty good. And generally, they work on really old computers. So in that case, you have to make sure that your computer isn't too new for one of those older boxes. If it says it needs Windows 3 or Windows 95, then don't buy it.
Right. No, I went into that when I was in a store, and they looked at it also, and they said, no, this would work for Windows 7.
Yep.
So, but they don't have them anymore.
Yeah. They'll
right,
usually
right.
say
a very small computer section inside stores now because so much is just done online.
Yeah.
Right.
And you
but
can always look on the side of the box. They always list
right.
what operating systems it will work with.
Steve is putting up a link to Major Geeks or?
And the CNET.
To both
downloads,
of them.
Yeah.
So you'll find those on soundbites.org. And that's bites with a Y.
Sound. Yeah, I .org. Okay.
Yep, and those will be listed right there.
All right, so if I go into soundbites.org...
Be right on the front page in about 2 minutes.
.com.
Yeah, it'll be right on the front page in about 2 minutes.
Oh, okay, great.
Okie doke,
thanks. Thank you guys so much.
You're welcome, Robin. Good luck with your games.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Mina Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour at Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Apple quietly launched a new battery replacement program to help a, quote, limited number, unquote, of MacBook Pro users. According to the program's webpage, some 13-inch MacBook Pros without touch bars may experience component failure that causes the built-in battery to swell. It's not a safety issue. Swollen batteries, which apparently aren't a safety issue.
Huh? As long as they don't breach, they're not a safety
issue. Right. But Apple will replace batteries on the affected laptops for free. Apple didn't provide details about which component inside these MacBook Pros could fail and cause the battery to expand. Affected laptops were manufactured between October 2016 and October 2017, and users can check to see if their device is eligible by inputting the device's serial number into the program's webpage, which Steve is putting up online, even as we speak. And now I've lost my place. Oh, older MacBook Pros as well. I'm old. Give me a break. I'm older than a MacBook Pro. Older MacBook Pros as well as MacBook Pro models with touch bars shouldn't be affected. Notice the use of the weasel word shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
If your device is eligible for battery replacement, you can either take your laptop to an Apple authorized service provider or to an Apple retail store to have it serviced. Authorized personnel may need to send the laptop to Apple's repair center for a few days, and you have the option to immediately send the device into the repair center yourself rather than going to a store first. Apple advises users to back up all data on their MacBook Pros. Pay attention to that. Apple advises users to back up all the data on their MacBook Pros and repair any other problems with the device before getting it serviced. So Apple doesn't want you sending them a device with multiple problems just to replace a battery, because they won't do it. It's unclear how many MacBook Pros may be affected by this issue, but Apple clearly wants to help users by fixing the problem as quickly and painlessly as possible. This isn't the first time Apple has provided free-of-charge battery replacements for some of its devices. Recently, it launched a program to replace batteries in 42-millimeter Apple Watch Series 2 models that either have swollen batteries or will not power on. The company also extended the warranty on first-generation Apple Watch models for an additional 2 years, providing battery replacement for free for up to 3 years after the original date of purchase. Serious battery issues with Apple, apparently. But those who suffer from lackluster iPhone batteries still have to pay up. After Apple's slowdown fiasco at the end of 2017, the company began offering $29 discounted battery replacements for select iPhone models at the start of this year. While that's better than the $79 out-of-warranty price users would have had to pay to replace their iPhone batteries previously, some still argue that the service should be offered for free for affected iPhones. Apple is offering the discounted iPhone battery replacement price through the end of the year. Do you have a MacBook Pro from that time frame? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, the difference is if the iPhone 6 batteries are worn out, they're consumed and worn out, and in this case, the MacBook Pro batteries are defective. And because of the way the MacBook Pros are built now, the top case, keyboard, trackpad, and battery are all glued together.
Excellent.
So the entire thing gets replaced. So basically, we take the guts of your computer out and put it into a different computer.
Essentially.
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah.
And then move your screen over to it. So it's not like a 5 minute battery replacement. It takes a couple hours.
Yeah, I don't doubt that.
In fact, I have one at the office waiting for me. I didn't start it this morning because I knew I wouldn't finish it before I had to leave.
And I understand that people get upset at the fact that they cannot change their batteries themselves. You would think a battery would be something that would be user replaceable. The problem with that, of course, is it costs more to make a computer with a replaceable battery or a phone with a replaceable battery. It's much cheaper for them to just seal it all up and send it out the door than to make it so that you can change your battery.
And they can make it physically bigger by not having the battery retention mechanisms and the locking tabs. And in this case, it's glued in, and it's multiple cells across the innards of the computer. In fact, if you look inside a computer,
you can make it smaller by leaving all that stuff out.
No, bigger.
Thinner. Oh, the battery bigger.
The battery is bigger, which gives you more battery life. Yeah.
Yes.
You look inside a modern computer, and it's 90% battery.
Yeah, it
in fact, is. We are shocked on how tiny the motherboard is on some of these new computers.
They essentially they're the size of a Raspberry Pi.
Yeah.
You don't need more anymore.
And it's all the rest of it's battery because we want our computers to do so much more under power. Somebody I remember did a look at the original laptop batteries where we were getting 4 or 5 hours of battery and we thought that was great. You put that battery on a modern computer, you get 4 or 5 minutes.
Yep. I remember getting 3 hours out of a battery and boasting about it.
Yep.
Yep. It's a whole different world we live in. And you're right. We need, you know, we talk about how if battery power had kept up with like whatever cars, mm-hmm. rockets, something else. But in fact, we do have much, much better batteries than we used to have. They're much denser than they used to be. They have much more power density in them as well. And you know, it's not perfect, but it ain't bad.
No, and we just keep wanting more and more the machines to do, and you know, trying to keep up with all those demands that you're putting on a system to do and have the battery power to do it all with.
And there's a couple of exciting new technologies coming online with great promise for making batteries smaller and higher energy density and safer. The swelling batteries are caused by the fluid electrolyte in the battery getting boiled off because there's a malfunction and short circuit in the battery, and that creates a gas that makes the battery swell.
Right.
One of the big things they're adding on some of the new batteries is a solid electrolyte, so you don't have that problem. And I've seen prototypes where they tested it with a pair of scissors, cutting pieces of the battery off, and the battery just keeps running, and no big problem.
Are those the lithium-lithium batteries?
Well, and that's the other thing. Right now we're using lithium ion. We can go back to lithium metal, which is much better energy capacity, but even more dangerous when using with liquid electrolytes.
Right.
So by having the solid electrolyte and going back to lithium, a pure lithium metal.
Of course, lithium is not cheap, so it would cost more.
Mm-hmm.
But the cost per watt is dropping down again, too.
Right.
But
then
that brings up, you know, lithium is a mined mineral. And apparently there are huge lithium deposits through the Middle East.
Right.
So, you know, if we stop using their oil, we're still going to need to use their lithium.
Right. Well, that's why our government at least is now doing is beginning to talk about giving people asteroid mining rights.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's apparently all those metals are up in the asteroids.
Yeah. But that's going to take a fortune to get an asteroid and move it here.
Exactly. Or mine it in some way. But now, you know, we're getting close to at least the the expanse, the near future science fiction stuff. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Max from Rochester, New York. Hi, Max. What's up?
Hi, guys. I have an iMac that's dying, so I bought a Mac Mini. And is there anything, can I just plug it in and just to see how it looks, or do I have to take any precautions or anything?
Generally, yeah. You plug it in, turn it on. The first thing it's going to ask is if you have a backup of your data and want to transfer it from your old computer. So if you have a backup, and you should, you can either plug in your backup drive to the Mini and it copies all your data from your MacBook Pro. Or if the old MacBook hasn't died completely yet, you can connect the two together and then copy all your data across.
Can I be selective in what data I copy across?
Not too selective. It's based on your home folder, so the documents folder, movies folder, pictures folder. You can turn those folders on or off, but you can't select sub things inside that folder.
When I made a backup to a new hard drive, I think I copied system files also. Will those copy onto the Mini and overwrite the good stuff?
No. It will keep the current system files and newer applications. So if you had an older application, an older version of Pages or Keynote on the old computer, it will not copy that and keep the newer version on the new computer.
Okay, so I can connect the two together, but could you also transfer from the cloud or Handoff or Dropbox or something?
Well, in that case, if you're using a cloud backup service, you need to set the computer up yourself first and then install the Dropbox program and then download those Dropbox files. and then install all the applications separately.
Okay. Speaking of hard drives, that hard drive I bought is so small. It's 1 terabyte, and it's incredibly small. Does that sound right?
Yep. Yeah, about the size of a pack of cards.
Yeah. It's amazing. Okay, guys, I won't keep you. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thank you.
Bye.
Yeah, both Mac and Windows have that option to transfer your data from your old computer. And I know at least on the Mac, you can do it from an old Mac or an old Windows.
Right.
Which is handy.
And I have to say, except I don't like it doesn't have a CD-ROM drive anymore, but I'm old. I think the Mac Mini is an amazing little box. Yep. It's only $500. And
little tiny box,
It's got... It's powerful and it's
it hasn't gotten a processor upgrade in a few years, so it's due for an upgrade. But we've been saying that for a couple of years now. But a lot of people like them for media servers. So you hook it up to your TV, you copy all your music and movies on it, and then it becomes your media server instead of needing racks and racks of DVDs and CDs.
Or you can just put Linux on it.
It's already got BSD on it.
Right, that's
but
true.
I've got a machine in the shop today where the guy wiped out the Mac OS and installed Ubuntu.
Yeah.
Okay, he likes Ubuntu versus BSD, I suppose.
It's a religious choice.
He could have made a partition and...
Yes, you know, yes, he could have.
Tri-boot.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Mac OS, BSD, and Ubuntu.
I did that with my laptop until Windows just died. I mean, it was during an upgrade and... Windows died, and I did spend about 5 hours on it, and I thought, okay, screw it.
Yeah.
I just wiped it out. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Walter from Rochester, New York. Hi, Walter. What's up?
Hello there, gentlemen. I called you last week because I had the problem with Thunderbird and Pop Mail.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't get the Frontier addresses.
Right. Well, I'll tell you. I'll just go quickly into what I did. I went to another computer that has the same operating system, Ubuntu 16.04, has Thunderbird, the latest Thunderbird, and I decided I'm going to go ahead and put in a new ID, whatever call it, my name number two. Went through the process. IMAP, it worked fantastic.
Great.
All right. Well, except for one thing. It did not go with pop.mail.yahoo.com. It had to go to pop3.frontier. I'm going too far ahead. It didn't work. I went to IMAP. First, I did IMAP with imap.mail.yahoo.com. Didn't take it. It did not go. I had to go to imap.frontier.com. It took.
Interesting.
Then I said, okay, this is great because I'm using KeePass X in order to put in my identity and password, etc. I got rid of that identity, said I'll go for the POP3. Did not take. And that is with POP3.frontier.com or with the pop.mail.yahoo.com. Did not take. I got instead, it'd be searching and searching. I finally got an error saying, does not match your name and password do not match our server.
Yeah, it's just a generic thing that says we don't know who you are.
Right. So I then did what you had in the article back in February. I changed things, from the SSL to other things and whatever, tried that going. Then I changed it back again, and nothing. It would not do it. Then, here's the interesting part then. I followed what Yahoo has out there, and I think Mozilla, to try to change the IMAP to POP3. Didn't work. So I reset up the IMAP account, went to POP3, did the shenanigans, nothing. It's the only thing I could think of is that 6 years ago, I saw a complaint in a forum that the person said, they talked to Frontier, the person said, the representative said, your password is too long or too complicated. So the person had to cut it down to 8.
Oh, man.
That was 6 years ago, and I'm thinking, if that happened 6 years ago, I would hope that they would change things and should take it. Because, again, I'm using on IMAP, I'm using on my tablet, I'm using on other things, using the web, getting to it. no problem. POP3, complete failure.
Unbelievable. Well, yeah, I'll tell you what, though. In general, you want IMAP over POP anyway.
Yes, that's what I've decided to do. Mm-hmm.
Because IMAP keeps all of your mail on the server, which means that you get the same set of mail on your desktop, your laptop, your tablet, your phone.
And if you're deleted in one place, it deletes it in the other places,
deletes
too.
Deletes it everywhere.
Also, all that junk mail you delete in one place.
You'd spend a lot less time managing your mail.
Right.
Or where was that message, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah.
Do you happen to have two-factor authentication turned on?
No.
Okay. Because that can also be an issue. Trying to log in with a mail client, you need to generate a client password when you're not using the mail website.
Right. All right. Listen, Walter, we got to go, but thank you for keeping us up to date on this.
Thank you very much. Take care, guys.
Yep. We're going to take a short break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 40 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member supported, Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave.
And I'm Steve Ray. And I guess we have to be jazzing the Casbah now.
That's exactly right. Not rocking the Casbah.
You gotta tone that down a little, Rob. It's right up there at our normal levels, and it's bending the needle.
Yeah, right. And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Mark from Greece, New York on the line. Hiya, Mark. What's up?
Hey, I just wanted to thank you. Last week, you gave me that solution for Firefox with a solid-state drive, and looks beautiful now.
Excellent. That's great. What we like to hear.
Beautiful.
So, we actually got one right. Mark, mark the calendar, somebody.
It was so simple. So simple.
Secret, it's simple.
I looked for other browsers on how to do it, and it's not that simple.
No, it isn't.
Yeah, so I just wanted to let you know it worked perfect. Everything's running beautiful now. The browser is fast as can be.
Good, good.
And, I wanted to mention the lady that was talking about games.
Yeah.
Staples has a few of those discs that have a lot of games on it.
Robin, of course, is still listening, so Robin, head on down to Staples for those game discs.
Yeah, they still have a little bit of that stuff with games and logo creators and stuff like that, so that's a good place to go if you're looking for some of that, you know, generic stuff.
Perfect.
So, thank you again, though.
Thanks,
thank
Mark.
Thank you.
Yep.
Yeah, I was cleaning out the computer room. Well, I was scratching the surface of beginning an attempt to think about cleaning out the computer room.
Yes, sir.
And I found a disc that had 1,001 fonts on it. It was, and I thought that's actually could continue to be useful in some way.
Nice.
Although I get all the fonts I want from fonts.google.com, so I don't worry about that stuff anymore. And that's fine. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Andy from Greece, New York. Hi, Andy. How are you today?
Hey, Nick. Well, we're doing pretty good. Just calling because we're actually coming up on the start of another month.
Right.
On Tuesday. So Thursday the 3rd at St. John's Meadow on Elmwood Avenue will be the monthly Rochester Googles meeting.
Right.
We talk about all things Chrome and Google, and sometimes we get Windows and Linux and other things in there as well.
Yeah, well, we do, as a matter of fact. We'll talk about pretty much anything anybody needs to talk about.
Yeah, and it's a good two-hour meeting, and you can learn a lot, and everybody's welcome. And
we'll have fun. We always do.
That's my plug for the month.
Excellent. Thanks, Andy.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Have fun. Yeah, we do meet. Rochester Googles has been running for a while now, and we meet and talk about all things, well, Google. But we also branch out into other stuff. We've had people who bring Chromebooks and bring laptops and bring, nobody's brought a desktop yet, and their phones, and we do all that stuff.
Do we have a link on our website, though, that tells how to hook up a printer to a Chromebook?
Probably.
Somewhere, but I don't know off the top of my head. Why?
No, I've got a friend that's, I talked him into doing a Chromebook, because I haven't gotten around to hooking up my Chromebook to print, I don't have a wireless printer.
Right.
And
But he does, and I was, you know.
Here's what you need to do is have him look at the printer itself. If it's new enough, it may be able to hook to Google Cloud Print by itself.
Okay.
And if so, he just registers it with Google Cloud Print and then says, oh, go print to that printer, and you're done. That's what I did at home. My brother, printer, LW, whatever the heck the number is, it has Cloud Print in it, and I just set that up and said, go. And
I'll have to tell. I say, because I just never did because I don't have, you know, a wireless printer, you know, in the house right now.
Right.
We did have, but then all of a sudden it decided to die.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah, that. But you know what? Yeah, I am amazed. My next printer, I'm going to get a color laser printer. They're not expensive anymore.
Mm-hmm. How much?
A few hundred bucks.
That's not bad.
Yeah. But
how's the commodities?
That's right. I haven't looked at that. I was about to say.
But you know, you have to think, you might pay $60, $70 for a toner cartridge. But it's going to last for 3,000-4,000 pages.
Right.
You look at ink tanks, you know, you pay $10-$12 for that ink tank. Well, that sounds pretty cheap. Then you look at it and it says it's half a milliliter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You work that out, that's about $5,000 a gallon.
Yep. That's exactly right. So it's the most expensive liquid you'll buy.
Mm-hmm. And so you're almost always better off buying a laser printer because the cost per print is so much lower. And hardly anyone needs to print in color anyway. If you want to print color photos, then yes, a liquid inkjet printer is the best for color photos because you can't afford a dye sub.
Yeah,
you want a dye sub.
You want a dye sub. Yeah.
But yeah, you know, most people just want color accents or color annotations. And even a $200 color laser printer does okay with photos.
And it used to be back when I did this for a living, it cost about 10 cents a page, and it's cheaper now. But it used to cost 10 cents a page to print black and white, $1 a page to print color.
Mm-hmm.
We had a faculty member who printed everything in black and white except he put a blue border around it. And I thought, we're not going to subsidize you for $1 a page so you can put a blue border around stuff.
Yep.
We're just not going to do it anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's some really great printers you can get for under $200. Color and wireless. Great. No, I want the one with duplex. Color, wireless, and duplex. That's $250.
I need color, wireless, duplex, and copying.
All-in-one. Then now, you need the all-in-one, yeah.
I need an
with
all-in-one
convenience
printer.
Copying, so now you're at $300.
Now, that's what I'm saying, $300 in color.
Yep.
I can make copies in color. Although, to be honest, I print nothing that I need color for. So that's why I have only the black and white one, because I don't need to spend that kind of money.
Yeah. Now, if you're a business and doing 5 or 10,000 pages a month, you probably want to get closer to that $1,000 printer.
Right. But for me, I print 6 pages a week. That's all I print.
You buy a ream of toner and it lasts for 6 months.
No,
a ream of paper, yeah.
Elaine prints fairly consistently.
That's like my wife.
My wife does too.
Bunch of stuff.
I can't get her to use the duplexer, though.
My wife goes through a lot with the Fidegrave and all that.
Yeah. Yeah, and if I ever do buy a color laser printer, it's her that's going to drive that. Not me. I don't need color, but she does. And so I was looking at the $300 printers, and I thought, all right, that's...
What about your 3D printer? When's that coming?
Yeah,
that's
was going to lead us another segue.
That's closer. I am one of the people who underwrote, I guess, a Kickstarter. I donated a Kickstarter, whatever the verb is for that, for the Obsidian, the Kodama Obsidian printer. And we're talking every day in the Discord forum on it, and we've got a couple of the developers in there, and they're showing very cool stuff, and it's just getting closer and closer. But they keep kind of upgrading it, and I don't have a problem with that.
They can't ship it because they keep adding features?
Well, they keep fixing features. Yeah. Like, the reality is that they've waited long enough. Now there's a whole new generation of stuff out, and they're retrofitting some of that generation. So I'm not arguing with that.
Yeah, nowadays, you can get it used to be you had to build, you bought, in essence, a box of parts, and you built your 3D printer.
Right.
Now you can get, fully assembled, commercial 3D printer for $200.
Right. And I may buy a second one at some point, but I want to play with this one first.
You start with a small one. In fact, I was talking with a guy. He just got a new 3D printer that can do 12 by 12 by 12.
Like, inches.
Oh, mine can only do 8x8x8.
Inches.
Inches. Yeah. I need a new one.
I need a new one. Exactly. Exactly right. A foot by a foot by a foot. You can build pretty much. People are buying those and building cosplay costumes out of them.
Hmm.
You know, you build your single print of your Iron Man helmet.
Yep.
Ooh.
And then you build a chess piece. Yeah. That's got to be multiple pieces, of course, but that sort of thing can be done. All right, we got a couple minutes to talk to Andy again, back from Greece. What's up?
Real quick on that hooking up a printer to Google.
Yeah.
Or to Chrome.
Yeah.
The operating system now does it.
Right.
You go up to the hamburger menu, down to printer, and you add a printer. If your printer is not wireless, if it's wired into your home network, as long as you know the IP address, it'll ask for the IP address, and then it asks you what the type of printer is, and it has a really big list of printers.
Right.
And most new printers now come with printers come with Chrome printing and Air printing and whatever other company.
Right, but if you have an older printer, it does have to have a network connection.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't, then it's a different story.
Well, I do have the HP 4000 on my network that's wired.
Right.
It's a network printer.
And as long as you know what the IP address is for it,
which you can get right from its menu.
Well, I got it. I've got it on the front of it.
Yep. Right.
When I set it up.
Right.
So it's got its own IP address.
All right. Thanks, Andy.
Thank you, sir.
Yep.
Yeah.
No problem.
Thanks. Yeah, I thought you had said your friend had only a wired printer, didn't have wireless.
No, I only have a wired, so that's why I wasn't able to help him. Like I say, it's not one of the high priorities on my list because, we've got our other computers.
Right.
The wife has been using the Chromebook quite a bit just for her purposes and has needed to print.
Right.
Looking up stuff on that. And I got the 4000 hooked up to my two, so I don't need it.
Right. But Andy is right. If you have a wireless printer that will do any sort of, a networked printer that will get to a network in any way whatsoever,
wired
as long as you know
wireless.
The address of it, you can set it up in Chrome. It's only printers that are have to be hooked up with a USB, and you still do it. It's just not easy.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I got a feeling that HP that we had, we still got it, but, it's all of a sudden jammed up and was working fine. And all of a sudden, and I blame it on because we got new cartridges. And we got a deal on these cartridges.
Yeah.
So we put in fresh cartridges. It's printing along, doing good, printing off her stuff. And then it jams. It just won't work right.
Well, are you sure that...
Sometimes there's problems with third-party cartridges.
Right.
They're too cheap.
No, these were HP cartridges. Yep. We got it at Staples, so we were just popping it, and it worked for a little bit. But then all of a sudden it's saying that there's a paper jam and all these other codes, and I spent a week trying to figure it out. And it ain't happening.
Yeah, there's a paper jam somewhere, but you can't see it.
Yeah,
up in the cloud.
Yeah, maybe.
We were having trouble with one of our printers in the office, and so we called the company, and they start out with, are you sure it's plugged in?
Yeah.
All right, we're computer people. Give us level 3, please. And then he had us read the serial number off the toner cartridge, and he said it was counterfeit. Well, no, it's got the name brand logo on it. We buy through distribution. No, it's counterfeit. We're not going to help you. What?
Really?
All right, we'll get another toner cartridge. How's that? And it's the fuser roller. I know that.
You're right.
But I was trying to get them to tell me where I can buy a fuser roller.
Right.
But they look at the toner, they look at the drum, all the paper jams.
And just had to go online.
Slide the corona wire back. I've done all that. I'm a computer guy.
Right. This is what I do for a living. I've done all that.
That's in the manual anyway.
Right.
It's the toner. It's fuser roller. How do I get the fuser roller out?
Right. That's what makes you a computer guy. You read the manual.
Read the manual, yeah.
That's the big difference between the gurus and the geeks.
Yeah. And the big problem is it's a $100 printer. So you throw it away and buy a new one. Well, we don't want to do that.
No. But like I say, you can go online and most companies, you can get the spare parts.
There's
online.
A Fix Your Printer website that I've actually posted a few things to. And every now and then I get an email from them. Your answer has helped 10,000 people.
Yeah, right.
Really? Okay, that's kind of nice, but really?
Yeah. Yeah. I get that from Google. I have a bunch of pictures on the Google local guides thing. I got a thing the other day that says this picture has helped 50,000 people. 50,000 people. I don't even know where what they're. I don't. Okay.
Yeah.
That's the internet for you.
Yeah.
It's the internet. Exactly.
Well, actually, that was the Cambridge Analytics. I can't call it a leak. I can't call it a breach because it was the intended feature.
Yeah, they gave it to
them. They did a study with, was it 50,000 people? And because they could do the people, the friends, and the friends of friends, they got 50 million results back.
Yep.
And so you are connected to people who are connected to people who are connected to people, and you don't have to go too many layers before there's hundreds of thousands of people you have touched.
Yep, that's the truth. That's the truth. It's a bigger world than we think. Like I said, in this Discord group, I'm talking to people from Sweden and from France and from all over the world, and it's kind of fun.
Yep.
All right, listen, that music tells me you've wasted an entire hour of your life with this nonsense, but we get a chance to do it again because we're going to take a slightly longer break, but we'll be back with a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, and that means you'll be listening to and possibly even speaking with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco. We're going to take all your questions, some of your answers, and a lot of our own nonsense. And we'll be back in just a few minutes with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, and we are right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is 90.1 WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival. Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter at 901Jazz.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we, yes, we, are Soundbites. How exciting is that? Okay, possibly more exciting to me than it is to you. All right, That's fine. Here we are, Gmail account users.
Oh, wow.
Spammers seem to have hit upon a new and ingenious method of sending out spam emails. That has been the case with numerous Gmail account holders who discovered, much to their surprise, that they sent out spam emails which they never actually did send. The affected user said they found several emails in their sent folder. Further, the emails have been sent to addresses which the user said they have never known before. As for the email itself, those are garbage at best, suggesting weight loss, pills, and growth supplements for men. And we know what we mean by growth supplements. Also, of course, none of the senders acknowledged having anything to do with the companies that promote such pills. Also, a common feature of the said spam is it is shown to have been sent via TELUS.com, T-E-L-U-S. TELUS is a Canadian-based, Canada-based telecommunications company that is quite reputable. Using their name makes the emails look that much more authentic. Basically, this is all just spam. And the way it's being sent out, what they do is they send a note out that says, we sent this from here, and it came from this address. And then you get a sent receipt in your sent email. Google has acknowledged that it is aware of the suspicious activity going on. It's a small group that's been affected. They found forged email headers that made users believe that the mails have been sent from those accounts. Also, that's the reason the emails are sending up in the sent account folder. Google assured Gmail account holders that none of their email accounts have been hacked in reality. They also said they're in the process of identifying all such emails and classifying them as spam. The company also suggested all users report any suspicious-looking emails as spam. Telos, too, has said it has nothing to do with the entire episode. None of their company representatives is in any way involved. And they also confirmed that none of the spam emails actually originated from their servers. This is just spam, and the way the internet works is you get a receipt that says you sent this. And Google says, okay, we sent this. Let's put that receipt in the sent mail folder.
Or you get all the angry bounce messages from people that say, take me
and
off
then,
your list.
Exactly. And then you get all the bounce messages because that's who it said it came from.
It's just
But in fact, it's not a hack. Yep. You were not hacked.
Yes.
They just used your email address as the reply to address.
It's just like a postal letter. You put anybody's return address you want.
Right.
So you send out a bunch of garbage letters. And you put, you know, Joe Blow 100 Main Street on it.
Used to be if you didn't put a stamp on it, you got the letter back. So I had a friend who, when he was out of town, would send mail to his parents by putting his as the return address and making up a fake address. Then his parents would get the letter and it would say undeliverable.
Yep. Or postage due, as they changed it to.
But right. Now it's postage due. Both Google and Telus have said they're actively pursuing the issue, expect to reach an early resolution in the mail. In the matter. So are you a Gmail user? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
And this pretty much happens with every mail service. I get mail all the time claiming that I sent this message to them and I didn't. Or the angry, you know, remove me from your list messages. And for a while, I was getting a lot of messages in Chinese. Apparently, a Chinese spammer was using my return address at Roadrunner.
Right.
To send out Chinese spam.
Which may be why you're having trouble with Roadrunner.
Roadrunner. Yeah. And every now and then, the entire Roadrunner domain would get blocked, which is crazy.
Right. Right. But it's not you. If you're one of those people who's finding that stuff in your sent folder, it's not you. You didn't send it. Your machine wasn't hacked. Your account at Google wasn't hacked.
And there's nothing you can do to stop it.
And there's nothing you can do to stop it, but Google and Telus are both working on stopping it themselves. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Don from Churchville, New York. Hi, Don. What's up?
Hi. I've got an older HP desktop that I use occasionally. I use my phone mostly in tablet, but the it's still got Windows 7 on it. And a couple of weeks ago, you were talking about Neverware.
Yeah.
Would that be the way to go instead of trying to upgrade to Windows 10, which I don't think it took. I tried it once, I think. But would that be a way to go?
Many machines are too old for Windows 10. It really won't take them. If it does take them, it doesn't take them well.
Good.
So something like Neverware is not a bad idea at all. What Neverware is a company that puts out a product called Cloud Ready. And Cloud Ready essentially turns a machine into a Chromebook. I mean, obviously, it's not exactly a Chromebook, but it's about 99.999% of a Chromebook, and you'll never know the difference.
Good.
So, yes, exactly. So,
but can I download it right off the internet, basically?
Absolutely.
I read it. You need to put it on a flash drive first or something?
Yes. If you go to neverware.com, neverware.com, there's a big orange button. Get started. It says, say hello to Cloud Ready, blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
Get started. And it'll tell you everything you need to do to download it. You put it on a drive.
Can download it with this computer, if you can still get on the internet. Download that and then put it on a USB drive to replace the OS on that computer.
And it'll look basically the same, or everything looked kind of different?
Well, it looks like a Chrome browser, which means when it comes, if you've ever seen, your best bet is two things. First, Google Chromebook, and you'll see pictures of it. You'll see what the front screen looks like. It's basically icons across the bottom and a browser in the middle. And essentially, a Chromebook is basically the Chrome browser in a box. So anything you normally do on the Chrome browser, you can do on a Chromebook or in Cloud Ready.
You can also go to a YouTube channel, and there's some good YouTubes there to show you demonstrations of Chromebooks, how to set them up, what they look like.
And Cloud Ready itself.
Yeah, and
sure.
Show you what you're going to be experiencing before you actually do it.
Right. Oh, sure. That sounds good. So it's a good plan, then, Neverware. Go to that.
I am a big fan of Neverwhere. So far, it's really worked extremely well. It is a free operating system for home.
Yeah.
If you are an education or an enterprise system, they have a free trial, but then you pay to get things like the Google Administration Console so that as an administrator of that network, whether it's educational or enterprise, you can manage all of those old laptops that are now Chromebooks or desktops.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you.
Yeah, you'll love it. Enjoy.
Okay.
For everybody else, just to clarify this, Neverware is the name of the company. Cloud Ready, all one word, is the product that they are giving away or selling access to. I have it on an old laptop, and when I say an old laptop, I ain't kidding. It works great, and the home I'm just using the home version. I don't need the enterprise version. It's very, very simple, very secure. It's essentially, remember, the Chrome OS is in fact essentially open source. It's the Chromium project. And Google has taken the Chromium, what they've done is they branded Chromium as Chrome and the Chromium OS as Chrome OS. But you can what CloudReady's done is taken the original Chromium OS and the Chromium browser and set them all up. And lots of people are using it to breathe life into older laptops and desktops. You get an old machine,
yep.
Throw this on it, it becomes essentially a brand new Chromebook. And Chromebooks don't need a lot of power.
And you probably only want to surf the web on it anyway.
Right, right. What they don't do is the newer versions of the Chrome operating system will also run Android apps, but you need a much more powerful machine and et cetera, to do that. And CloudReady, to this point at least, has not elected to follow that route just yet. So this is a regular, plain vanilla, basic Chromebook. So you can run it on an Atom processor if you want to, but certainly you can put it on an old.
And it's saving you the money and the expense of just throwing that machine out and having to buy something else new.
Right,
it's all free.
Or limping along with something old and vulnerable.
Yes,
well, that's exactly right. Yeah. You can't get updates for a lot of the older operating systems, and you can't get any newer programs to do that. But you can do all the web stuff that you normally do through Chrome, on that, including I get my email through it, and I do all kinds of stuff through it. And it's got a file browser, so you can look at files on the machine, and et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot of stuff there. All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. Hi, Larry. What's up?
Good afternoon, guys. This one's actually for Dave for mildly scolding me once again about backing up. I tried to download icons for Google and iCloud to my desktop the other day, and I don't know, I did something weird, but it wiped my documents and it wiped my desktop. And after panicking for an hour, I realized that I back up every day.
Great.
So I backed up and I reclaimed it. I think I lost absolutely nothing.
Excellent.
So, there you go.
Thank you for the chastisement and the learning. I'm done.
Yep.
Bye. Have a good one.
Thanks.
I had a customer in this week with something similar had happened, and somehow she made a new username, which is now empty.
Right.
So all her data was in the old username.
Right.
And there are many steps involved in making a username, logging out of that user, logging into the other user. It's difficult to see how that can be done accidentally, but somehow it got done accidentally, and all my files are gone. I can't find all my pictures. And there's like 100 gigs worth of pictures.
Right.
And that's just what it was. It was in a different username.
Right. Right.
So
I don't know, and I certainly don't know how downloading iCloud and Google Docs can wipe things out. But I'm going to look into that.
Well, iCloud. Well, on a Mac with the iCloud drive, one of the features now is iCloud Documents. So it puts all of your documents on the cloud.
Right.
Which is handy because then you can see it on other computers.
Right.
When you turn off iCloud Documents, it archives the folder in your home folder. So your desktop empties, your documents empty.
That's not good.
No. Well, it tells you it's doing that, but no one reads that.
Yeah, message. No one reads that. No one knows what it means. Yeah.
So your desktop looks like it's empty. Your documents folder looks like it's empty because it's all in the iCloud archive in your home folder.
Interesting.
So it turns on really nice. It turns off horribly.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. So the short answer is don't turn off iCloud desktop.
Yeah, right, right, right.
And
right,
if
right.
you do, all of your stuff is now in your home folder under a folder that says iCloud archive.
So, Larry, definitely take a look there, see if your stuff is... So yeah. Now you've got duplicates on your machine, essentially.
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's better than having nothing.
Well, yes, that's exactly right. Yep. That's exactly right. I understand that. But you got to be careful. People don't understand, people don't read error messages to begin with. And if they do read them, sometimes they don't pay enough attention.
Yeah. And if, say, you and your spouse use the same Apple ID, when you turn on iCloud Desktop, all of her documents will show up on your computer and all of your documents show up on her computer.
Right.
Because it now merges those two documents together because you use the same Apple ID.
Right. So people, well, and I don't know why people do that. It's not like you're paying for an Apple ID.
Right. Well, and so initially it was just you set up one and then where you buy all your stuff. And then when your kid's crappy music started showing up in your iTunes library, that's when we started separating IDs.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, so if it's more than that, more than just your documents, your messages, you know, so if you have the same ID on both your phones, you get all her messages, she gets all your messages.
Right.
And so you really want to have separate IDs. Then you can make what's called an iCloud family, so you can still share your purchases. So if you know, you buy a song or a book or an app, everyone in the family can access that app without paying for it again.
Right.
The app developers hate that.
Right.
but as a family, you buy it once, you can use it everywhere in your family.
Nice. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco. We've got people waiting on the line, and we'll get to them as well. And you're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites and the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that we are indeed solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Before we get back to the phones, we had a text message. And that was from Mike, who said, which Chromebook would we recommend? Well, that's actually a fairly long answer, Mike.
Yeah.
It depends on how much money you want to spend, et cetera, et cetera.
What size screen you want?
The Chromebook Pixel 1200?
The Chromebook Pixel would be the best one at $1,000. That would be great.
But you want the $1,200 one with the extra storage and the pens.
Yeah. Right. $1,200 one is the better one. But there are lots and lots of models. I have a Toshiba that I very much enjoy. I have an HP that I very much enjoy. Asus is making one that I've been eyeing lustily, and there are a bunch of people who make them, and it's just a matter of how much you want to spend. Basically, a Chromebook is a Chromebook is a Chromebook, so unless you're specifically looking for Android apps, pretty much any one you want to buy at any price range will give you essentially the same experience. Some will be a little faster, some will be a little slower, but all of them are essentially the same device.
And it's the same sort of spec ratings you see with regular Mac, Windows, everything else, desktops. How big a screen do you want? How much storage do you want? How much processor do you want? Although the Chromebook, the storage isn't as big a deal because most of your storage is going to be on Google.
Right.
So you don't need much local storage. That's why you see a lot of Chromebooks are like 4 gigs. And that's all the local storage they have. Not 4 gigs of RAM, 4 gigs of storage.
Well, they come with 16 gig now, and so you get about 10 gig of storage, which most people never use, ever.
Yeah. Yep.
Most of the machines come with 4 gig now, although you can still find 2 gig machines. 4 gig is nice. The more RAM you have, the more tabs you can have open. And that is nice.
Mm-hmm.
So, Mike, if you're looking for a Chromebook, something with 4 gig is better than something with 2 gig. Beyond that, a slightly faster processor maybe is helpful, but not so much.
It depends on your needs.
Yep. Right. Yeah.
I can't imagine. I hear stories of people that have hundreds of tabs open, and I can't imagine that. I have trouble managing, you know, a dozen tabs.
Right.
And the people in my office always get mad at me when they sit down at my computer and there's so many tabs open. What do you mean there's so many tabs? There's like three.
Yeah. But I, well, when I come here, I have three or four tabs open, and I've had 35 tabs open, and it's a 4 gig machine. But yeah.
I do it a little differently. I'll have a window open, and in that window, I'll have related tabs. And so I have a window now with printer look stuff because we were looking at printer stuff. I've got a window open with three tabs on Chromebooks because we were looking at that. So I organize it that way, windows and then tabs.
Right.
Instead of one window with 1,000 tabs in it.
Right. But in general, Chromebooks are Chromebooks. So whatever fits your budget, clearly if you're looking for Android capable Chromebooks, they're a little more expensive.
There's a $1,700 one with an i7.
Ooh. Great.
Well, then you're up into a real computer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Chromebooks are great, and I use them for dang near everything these days. All right, back to the phones. Our patiently waiting on the line. Our next caller is John from Greece, New York. Hi, John. What's up?
Hi. I was listening to the problems Walter was having.
Yeah. His Frontier address is on his Thunderbird.
Right.
Yeah.
He didn't say anything about setting Thunderbird up to use OAuth.
I was ready I was going to start mentioning that when we had to go to commercial. So Yahoo and Frontier are using OAuth, which is a third-party authorization authentication.
O-A-U-T-H.
No, they're using O-A-T-H.
Really?
Yeah. That's the link I got to.
That's weird. Okay, sorry, but you're right. You're right, John. Absolutely. Go ahead.
If you go to the Frontier Help Center,
right,
it says if you use a third-party email client, it must be OAuth compliant, and then it gives a link for instructions on how to set it up.
Perfect.
And I would assume that Thunderbird is OAuth
compliant. Yes, because
compliant.
Google uses it as well, Gmail, and I use it there.
Yeah, I had to... redo my email, and I had to set that up.
Yep. Yeah, Google has a feature called a less secure authentication if your mail client doesn't support it. But most third-party mail clients support it now. So, I'll post a link for that as well. So to Walter earlier, make sure you're running the latest version of Thunderbird that has the OAuth capability. Now, that's where I confuse myself. OAuth is the... authentication standard. Oath is the name of the joint company that Verizon created when they bought AOL and Yahoo and all the other companies they're buying.
Right.
Which was stupid.
Right. The protocol is called OAuth.
Yeah.
O-A-U-T-H.
And the company is Oath. So Oath is using OAuth?
Yes.
Clear
People
as mud.
Are idiots. Yeah. Let's just leave it at that.
Yeah. How much did they spend in the marketing department to come up with this new name?
Yeah, exactly.
Because every other name is that's the problem, is every other name is taken.
Right, and that's true. All right, that's an excellent point, John. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Very nice. Very, very nice. There's Yahoo bought a whole bunch of companies, didn't they?
And then Verizon bought Yahoo.
And then Verizon bought Yahoo, exactly.
They bought Yahoo for $1 billion. Even after Yahoo announced that they lost 1 billion user accounts.
It's just a buck an account.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal.
And it turned out it was 3 billion after all, but...
Right.
Why would you still buy them? And I guess they just wanted a little bit of a discount.
Right, yeah, right.
$1 billion for a company that lost everybody's credentials.
Right, yeah, but a week before it would have been worth 8 billion.
Yeah.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ed from Henrietta, New York. Hi, Ed, what's up?
Yeah, hi. Speaking of Oath, I'm glad that came up. I just wanted to ask you guys, they've got this new scary policy that, about 15 pages that you have to read and who does that, blah, blah, blah. But I guess you have to essentially, I sent them an email and they got a response. My question was, the way you read their new policy that allows them to get into anything, your emails in reference to your banking or anything to do with revenue, whatever, they can just snoop around in there. So I said, I mean, my question to them was, does this give you guys the way it's written, the license to just go in and fish around any place in my account? Is that true? And I got this kind of generic, well, we're here to serve the public, blah, blah, blah. And the bottom line was, well, if you don't like it, don't use our
account.
Well, question, exactly.
I don't know if you've heard anything, or should everybody say, screw it, I'm going to eat Gmail instead.
Yeah. It's the same thing at Google. whoever your email is with, they can read every message you send.
Right. The theory is they don't, but they certainly can.
They can, yeah. So we've said for years that email is like a postcard. Anybody along the way can read it. They probably don't, but they can. And so that's sort of the danger of email is anyone can read it.
One of the problems that everybody's having right now is that the European Union,
GDPR,
the General Data Protection Regulation, GDPR, they have passed this law, and it's all about data protection and privacy, and it's all about revealing what people can do. So the new language is, yeah, we could do all this. Doesn't mean they do it, but they have to now if you want people from the European Union to be able to access your site, you have to announce that you could do all this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you agree to it, then you're just you're kind of out of luck. Or does everybody do it? I guess maybe we should ask that question.
Basically, everybody does it. I mean, as Steve said, if I ran a mail server and you were on it, the simple fact is I could read your mail. That's the person who runs the mail server can read the mail.
Any mail. If you don't want that to happen, you need to encrypt your message on your machine first before you send it.
Right, and that's the
which is thing a pain.
Many of them used to do. Thunderbird has a plug-in to do that, mm-hmm. but it also means that the person at the other end has to do that. You have to exchange credentials and yada yada yada, and it's not easy to do. But in general, if you send plain text messages anywhere about anything, pretty much anybody along the way can read them. If you were to look at the full headers of your email, you would see it goes through about 15 different machines before it gets to the recipient's server. And anybody along the way could, if they want to, grab that message and read it.
But what about the implication that I got was that they could, say, get into your, Nick's banking account and look around in there.
If you emailed your bank credentials,
right,
then they have your bank credentials.
Hmm. So, for example, is online banking with them just is it a dangerous thing to do?
If you are doing your online banking through Yahoo, I personally wouldn't.
Well, yeah. that was probably one of the properties that Verizon bought them for is Yahoo Finance. Got a lot of really good news and good stock tracking. But I wouldn't use them to actually purchase any stocks or anything like
Nor
that.
Nor would I allow them access to my portfolio in my bank account.
Somebody just texted Proton Mail. Proton.
Well, that's one of the ones that
they claim to encrypt it end to end, and they can't read it in the middle. But then you can only send to other people who use Proton Mail.
Right.
Yeah. So what would you think of Gmail? Do they have the same problems?
Everybody has the same situation going on. But what I would suggest is that whoever you get your email from, you not use them for also your banking. Right. And of course, you want different passwords on your bank than you have anywhere else. Should never reuse a password, but certainly not with your bank. And almost every bank on earth nowadays allows you to log in directly. So you don't need to go through a third party to do your banking online.
And in general, we have recommended don't use your internet provider for email, because then it makes it hard to switch internet providers because now you have to change your email address. But that is just a convenience factor of there's so much inertia. I know a lot of people with AOL addresses because that's what they've had for 20 years.
Right.
It's just so much inertia in that and telling everyone your new address. It's worse than physically moving.
Yeah, right. It is.
But all the email companies are the same way. That company that hosts your mail can, if they wanted to, read every message you send and receive is too.
Right. And like I said, nothing has changed. Except that the European Union has passed a law, the GDPR, the General Data Protection Regulation, that says you must disclose this information to your users.
And it takes effect at the end of May. And part of the GDPR is that you can request to have your data deleted. So Europe is much more user privacy focused, where the U.S. seems to be more company focused. Right. And so as a user, there's right to be forgotten laws in Europe, too, where you can go to, say, Google and have all of the search results about you removed. And so a lot of companies are adding these services. They're telling you what the information they're going to share, and they're allowing you to delete an account if you want to. In fact, we've heard that Apple is working on that as well, that you'll be able to delete your Apple ID account, which you have never been able to do before.
Right.
You just ignore it and stop using it.
And it's not the United States that gave us those abilities. It's the European Union that mm-hmm. gave them to us.
Yep.
And basically the idea is, well, Google is doing it now with their brand new version of Gmail. You can, I forget, they have some fancy term for it, but essentially wipe out a mail that you have sent, and it will disappear from everybody's system, both you and your receiver, and it'll wipe it out. Now, if you are using a third party program like Thunderbird, of course, it can't do that. But if you are strictly using Gmail online, right, through your browser, you can destroy an email completely, and the receiver's copy gets destroyed, and any other duplicate copies that you sent out to other people are also destroyed. Mm. But again, that's because of this GDPR from the European Union. It isn't our government that gave us that right.
Yeah, man, don't hold your breath if it will. Okay, hey, listen, this is very interesting. That is kind of scary. Okay.
Yep. All right.
Thanks a lot. Take
yep.
care.
Yep.
In fact, our government is actually arguing the other way. They want to be able to break all encryption, so you cannot
right.
send anything privately. Because the bad guys did, okay, so that means that us regular folks can't have privacy either.
Right. Right, and so
that's sort of a fundamental right. We were talking about that on another podcast I was listening to. Do we, as an American citizen, have a fundamental right to have something private from the government?
The government will say no.
Right, and the government has said no.
The government says no, but in the European Union, and we are now a global
yep.
village, and obviously companies like Google and Yahoo and whatever want a global presence. So they have to follow the strictest.
Yep.
It's the opposite of the weakest link in a chain. Mm-hmm. You have to follow the strongest link in a chain.
Right.
And right now it's the GDPR at the European Union.
And the alternative is to stop selling your services into the EU.
Which they're not going to do because there's millions upon millions of people.
Google did do that in China. They didn't
right.
want to abide by some of the Chinese laws.
And because the Chinese laws were, we want to be able to do everything. We
yeah.
want to be able to look at everything, take everything. Give us access to your
yep.
servers. And Google's like, yeah, no.
No, no.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. If you're on the line, please stay on the line. We'll get to you when we get back. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported. Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Bodan from Rochester, New York on the line. Hi, Bodan. What's up?
Gentlemen, greetings. Hey, listen, you guys have been talking about malware and stuff like that. I had an incident this morning happen, and I just try to figure out where exactly the villain, the culprit is. And I'll say, this morning I do have access to the digital online version of the Democrat and Chronicle newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
I clicked on an article to read the paper, and I read that article, and then I clicked on the comments. I wanted to see what the
internet.
All of a sudden, I clicked on a comment. Within 5 seconds, I got that warning
yep.
that Microsoft has mm-hmm. Detected a problem on your computer. Please call this toll-free number to rectify the problem. I closed Edge, the web browser and stuff like that, and I just deleted the history and the cache.
Yep.
Where is the problem? Is the problem on my computer, or is the problem on that click that I took to read a viewer's or a comment from one of the posts there?
Yeah, here's the issue. It's likely you should definitely do a sweep of your system, dance the tango on it. But it is likely that it was just a fake message.
And it was an ad.
Essentially
on the
an
comment
ad,
website.
A pop-up ad.
But an ad posted to the Democrat and Chronicle, how can they not control that?
Well,
ads are automatic.
Well, yes and no, but it may have been an ad. It also may have been somebody stuck something in a comment. There are two ways that you can manage comments on the internet. One is to strip out.
One is to manage them, period.
When it manage them, period, right. Yeah. But if you are the programmer at the back end, right, you can strip out any HTML code, or you can leave it in. Duh.
And it looks like DNC is using Facebook's commenting system.
Oh, yeah, that's only completely notorious. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
So what should I or other people who are listening to this do to minimize or eliminate this warning that comes up that, saying that you've got a problem? Call Microsoft.
There's nothing you can do.
Don't use the web.
Don't look at the comments is the first thing. 90% of the comments on any website, anywhere, are dreck. So,
are what?
Dreck. It's a
junk.
Junk is the politer way. Yes, junk. They're junk. I apologize to anyone who knows what the word dreck actually means. So, yeah, it's junk. If you have a program like, if you have a Facebook comments, for example, Facebook doesn't stop you from putting a lot of that stuff in there. So you can put in a link to another page. And if that other page is one of those sites that pops up a thing that says, oh, my heavens, you've been hacked. Microsoft says you've been hacked. Call this number immediately. You'll get that because they don't stop it. Facebook.
So, Nick, where is the problem? Should DemocratandChronicle.com be monitoring what the posts are and if they're possibly fraudulent malware?
But they're not coming from the DNC. They're coming from Facebook. They're using Facebook's system, and so it's Facebook that would have to police their own
filter
stuff. Yeah, and as we know, Facebook couldn't care less.
The DNC could hire people to monitor every comment.
But they would have to get rid of the Facebook comment.
Yeah.
App
and that's
and run their
cost
own
of money.
Comments.
Yeah, even DNC wants you to sometimes, they say, either log in with your account information or log in with your Facebook. You know, I don't do that. I just log in with my DNC digital subscription, login.
Right.
A lot of companies use the Facebook login or the Google login, so they don't have to write
because
their
own.
Because
it's convenient.
Right. Well, part of it also is then they know who you are and then they can access and see who your friends are and stuff like that. So they have access to who you are.
Yeah. Right, and let's be honest, that's something that you can get Facebook to pay you to allow, because now they get all that information as well. So I understand why companies do it, and I'm not singling out the DNC. I love the DNC. Let me put that right out there now. I'm not singling them out. Lots and lots and lots of companies do it. It is convenient. It makes them money. It saves them money. It's a win-win for everybody except the end user, because now you're actually using Facebook's comment system, and that is the wild, wild west.
Yeah.
Got it.
And part of the way the ad networks work is that the people that design the website leave a hole of X by X.
Well, technically, I would blame the DemocratandChronicle.com for allowing that to happen.
If someone could post a comment, yes, so they could have people monitor every single comment. That would cost a fortune, and in fact, a lot of blogs don't allow comments, period, just for that reason.
Right.
And ads on websites are all also automated. That there are millions of ad impressions an hour, and there's no way anyone can police them all. And that's what the bad guys are doing now. So the bad guy buys an ad, sticks it into the network, and it shows up on legitimate sites. We used to be able to say, don't go to the naughty websites.
This was a comment made through an article
and,
on a Democrat
and
Chronicle
and
website.
And that's where these malicious ads are now showing up, is on legitimate websites.
So also, let's say, Bowden, let's just say, for the sake of argument, that Facebook is being incredibly diligent about scrubbing out all of these things. They're never going to get all of them instantly because, as Steve said, there are millions of comments being posted every second. Even computer speeds are going to take some time to scan through them all. So it is certainly possible that in this particular instance, you fell through the cracks. In between somebody posting that malicious link and Facebook scrubbing it out, you fell into the crack between those two and got caught.
I see it. But on the other hand is this. If I use Facebook, that's something that is free and I don't pay anything for. I pay to access Democrat and Chronicle and the content that is implied in that product.
Right. Then you have to complain to the DNC. They are using Facebook for any one of a billion reasons, some of which are very, very good. And so you need to understand that as long as they're running Facebook's comment system, then the real onus of what appears on that site is Facebook's, not DNC's.
I totally get it now. Hey, listen, on a different off-topic, Jazz Fest is less than 2 months away.
Uh-huh.
Nick, will I see you at the booth of Jazz 90.1 on that little street there next to the big tent?
Anything is possible. Dave will certainly be there.
Yep.
I know, Dave. Listen, Dave has become a celebrity, and he's got a group of groupies that follow him to the different shows that he has to introduce.
It's the only reason he does this,
he's become a celebrity of your station.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. Yep. It's the only reason he does any of this is he just went for the groupies. That's why he's in it.
Yep.
I'm telling you, Dave, people actually stand in line to get his autograph.
Unbelievable. And he only charges them $1.
He charged me $5.
I'm sorry, $5.
Wait a minute. Rob was sitting next to me collecting it. I never got any.
No, you don't. It all goes to the station.
Station. Yeah.
All right, my friend. All right, thanks, Bodan.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, we got time for another call. I think we've got at least time for one more.
Switching. And I'm looking up some statistics here. It's about 10,000 posts on Facebook every second.
Yeah.
So you would need to hire at least 20,000 people at the DNC to catch every comment that goes by.
Not all of them are going to the DNC, but still, yes. Yeah, exactly. It's not something that they can do. And there's a lot of very good reasons. I didn't hear any of that. Yep. All right, our next caller is Ed from Canandaigua, New York. Hi, Ed, what's up?
Hey, I'm doing good. Proud to be a member.
That's what we like to hear. Thanks.
Yeah. Say, I've got a question about QuickBooks and Quicken. I know you said a couple of weeks ago that they were going to go to the cloud.
Yep, QuickBooks and Quicken both go into the cloud.
Right. My question is, can I use Chromebooks and Linux or Linux? I know now it's just Microsoft or Apple.
No,
it's a web browser. Any web browser should work.
Right. As far as I know, once you're using the web version, any machine will be able that has a web browser attached to it will be able to get to the Quicken or QuickBooks sites and do whatever you need to do.
Okay. Is that working okay?
I don't use it myself. Dave, are you on the web version of Quicken?
No. I'm doing it for the backup. I signed up for their service that, excuse me, I think I got it set up for 3 times a week. It automatically takes my Quicken and backs it up to the cloud.
Yep. Right.
Now, according to Intuit's website, they don't currently support Linux, which means they don't answer questions.
Right.
But it doesn't mean it doesn't work.
But no, I will be probably before, the summer's over with looking into that. And that would be far handier and better, as far as just being able to, no matter whether it's on my phone or on my tablet or, on my computers, to be able to look at it, and do stuff as far as my checking account.
But I can't wait to get away from Microsoft.
Yep.
Yeah. According to this, QuickBooks runs well on several browsers. And it says, I'm on a Chromebook, and it says Chrome 66.0 for Chromium OS, checks okay.
And cookies and JavaScript. And
It does cookies, it does JavaScript. I am blocking pop-ups, which you can elect to unblock on a per-site basis. But according to the Intuit website, Chrome is fine.
Great.
There you go.
Yep.
All right.
And
thank you much.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
There's been some, in fact, we've thought about this in our office too. There's this feeling that I don't want to put all my information on the web for Intuit to look at it. But in most cases, it already is because your banks already know your information and the companies you buy stuff from already knows your information. But having one more point of failure, I don't like.
Well, that's the big thing, isn't it? Yeah, exactly. All right, that music tells me we're done. We're done for another week. I want to thank every single person who called in. Great show this week. Great questions. I want to thank Dave Enright. I don't know why, but I do. And I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. Now, careful, you're on the camera there. Careful, careful. Yeah, scratch your nose. We'll don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael's here to keep him on the straight and narrow, so it's fairly secure. We'll be back next week, yeah, with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. You remember, you can listen to us on the Google Home or the Amazon Echo as well. And we will see you in just 166 hours. Thanks.